on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And I hope you are all keeping very healthy this week and staying safe in your homes. I know times are getting very difficult at the moment with self-isolation, quarantine, goodness knows what else is happening as we speak. Above all, trying to keep yourselves healthy, I think, is the main priority, and keeping calm over all this. And obviously there's been lots of panic around and lots of different reports from various different countries. But we need to be able to feel that we can cope with anything and everything that life may throw at us, don't we, really? And it's getting very worrying indeed, I have to say. But anyway, obviously I'm going to be talking about the coronavirus on the show this evening. I think we can't avoid that at the moment, but also we do need to still be thinking about other aspects of our health as well and keeping as fit and healthy as we can all round. So starting off with the usual news roundup, and then I'll go on to some more subjects in depth. So brushing your teeth 3 times a day could help reduce your risk of heart failure and atrial fibrillation, or irregular heartbeat. Keeping the teeth and gums clean reduces the build-up of bacteria, which can cause inflammation in the body, including the heart. Specialists are slowly coming round to the realisation that heart problems are a disease of inflammation. The risk reduction is quite small. Brushing the teeth 3 times a day reduces the risk of heart failure by 12% and of atrial fibrillation by 10%. Researchers from the Korean National Health Insurance System say it's too early to categorically state that teeth brushing is a way to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease, but it's starting to look that way. They tracked more than 161,000 people between the ages of 40 and 79 who didn't have heart problems. And over the 10 years of the study, 3% developed atrial fibrillation and nearly 5% suffered heart failure. And the risk was less in those who took better care of their teeth and gums. The researchers believe the risk is reduced because frequent brushing reduces bacteria in the subgingival biofilm, which are the pockets between the teeth and gums, so less is released into the bloodstream. So, that's interesting, isn't it? I think there's long been that relationship between gums and heart. So never hurts to brush your teeth a few extra times a day, or one extra time a day, does it? Morning, evening, and a little brush at lunchtime as well. And multiple sclerosis could be triggered by a viral infection, and specifically those involving several herpes viruses. Now, MS is an autoimmune disease that attacks the central nervous system, but scientists have been mystified as to why it starts. Now, the Epstein-Barr herpes virus has been suspected as a trigger, but new research has discovered that the onset of MS could be the result of several herpes viruses acting in concert, with the herpes virus 6 strain playing a key role. MS sufferers are more likely to be carriers of the herpes 6A strain, and it could be this that kickstarts the disease, say researchers from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. People with MS had a 55% higher risk of having antibodies against the 6 strain, the researchers discovered after analysing blood samples from 8,700 MS sufferers and 7,200 healthy controls. And furthermore, by testing blood drawn an average of 8 years before MS sufferers first developed the symptoms, the researchers found that people who had a herpes 6 infection when they were children were more than twice as likely to develop MS as adults. Although the Epstein-Barr virus still seems to be linked to MS, the risk is magnified when the sufferer is also a carrier of the herpes 6 virus. Lots of interesting discoveries there. And apparently chicken soup isn't only good for the soul, it could help to fight off malaria too. Traditional soups and broths are as effective as the standard anti-malarial drug Urartism. Probably haven't said that right, but It's the standard drug anyway, in blocking the parasite that causes malaria. The soups slowed the growth of the parasite Plasmodium falciparum by more than 50%, which is comparable to the effects of the drug. 9 soups and broths, all based on traditional recipes, were tested for their anti-malarial qualities by researchers from Imperial College London. I bet they had some fun doing that as well, didn't they? The researchers had asked school children to bring soups based on old family recipes from across Europe, North Africa and Middle East for the experiment. The soups had been traditionally used to help reduce fever. Wow, that sounds like a really good experiment, doesn't it? It's a bit like the Bake Off, but a soup-based one or something like that. Although the soups had a vegetarian, chicken or beef base, the other ingredients were different, and yet all could either curb the growth of the parasite or stop it from maturing and infecting mosquitoes. This suggests that there are other active ingredients beyond artemisinin, which is the basis of the standard drug that can fight malaria, although the researchers haven't isolated or identified them yet. So it's important that they do, because resistance to the frontline anti-malarial drugs is increasing, and malaria kills an estimated 400,000 people a year and infects more than 200 million. So that's competition for the coronavirus, isn't it? Indeed. So we have to look beyond the chemistry shelf for new drugs, and natural remedies shouldn't be off the watch list. That's according to the researchers. I think natural remedies should be on the very top of their lists, really. And coffee is in our blood, and as our pharmaceutical drugs, suggesting that pure blood used in transfusions isn't so pure after all. People having a transfusion are also likely to get a shot of caffeine and a variety of prescription drugs as well. The chances of receiving contaminated blood are high, say researchers, who discovered that each of the 18 batches of blood they analysed contained some contamination. The most common contaminant was coffee, found in each of the 18 pure blood samples, but most of them also contained traces of cough medicine and an anti-anxiety drug. Our researchers from Oregon State University specifically tested for 3 drugs: the anti-anxiety drug Xanax, over-the-counter cough suppressant Dextromethorphan, and tolbutamide, a medication for type 2 diabetes. And the researchers say there's a good chance that traces of other pharmaceuticals were also present in the samples, but they hadn't tested for them. So although caffeine was more a reflection on society than a health risk, the fact that powerful drugs were found in blood considered suitable for transfusion was more concerning, the researchers said. The drugs in there could be an issue for patients. And vitamin D supplementation has been linked to improvements in autoimmune diseases, including Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, and multiple sclerosis. So start taking your vitamin D. And dentistry now. Drill and fill has been the dentist's standard approach to tooth decay for more than 50 years, but it doesn't stop further decay or infection. It's no more effective than sealing the tooth or preventing decay through a low-sugar diet. That's according to a new study of 1,140 children with tooth decay. More than 40% of children suffered further toothache, abscesses and decay afterwards, irrespective of the treatment they had. That's according to researchers from the University of Dundee in Scotland. Prevention through healthier diets is the best approach, especially for kids. The children, aged between 3 and 7, randomly received one of 3 treatments for tooth decay. The preventative approach, which avoided fillings, but instead tried to reduce further decay by reducing sugar intake and twice daily brushing. The standard drill and fill, or a minimally invasive approach where the decay was sealed and a metal crown and a low sugar diet recommended. The study found that current drill and fill practice is not the best approach, even though it's the one most commonly used by dentists. The best way to manage tooth decay is not by drilling it out or sealing it in, it's by preventing it in the first place. That's according to the research as well. As the old saying goes, prevention is always better than cure, isn't it? Supplementing with the amino acid tryptophan can improve sleep quality and the time it takes to fall asleep without impairing mental performance. So that's interesting to know, isn't it? And apparently as well, this is rather more worrying, Many drugs routinely given to the elderly, opioid painkillers, antidepressants, antacids and sleeping drugs, weaken the bones or may increase the risk of a fall as well. And I think that's probably something to do with the concoctions of drug mixtures that people tend to take as they do age. So lots of different things sort of kind of acting against each other maybe in the circumstances. Right, we're going to take a little break now, and after the break I shall be talking to you about the dreaded coronavirus and and some of the myths behind it as well. So we'll dispel some of those myths. That's always a good thing to do, isn't it? So stay tuned for more right after this.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And yes, we're talking coronavirus, the word that's on everybody's lips these days. And thinking about dispelling some of the myths around it as well. Now, as the coronavirus epidemic gathers pace, fake news and health myths have sprung up on social media, spreading further panic and confusion as well. Now, the NHS is currently advising you to stay at home for up to 14 days if you have either a high temperature or a new persistent cough. But as doctors work around the clock to contain the outbreak and find a cure, much is unknown. Perfect conditions for an outbreak of public misinformation, I think. So as a result, the NHS has enlisted the help of social media platforms, including Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and Google, to battle the spread of fake news, which is vital as so many of the rumours start on these websites. So let's take a look at some of the most common myths to sort out fact from fiction. So, can you test yourself with a kit at home? Now, Public Health England has warned against using rapid testing kits that promise swift results in around 10 minutes, compared with NHS tests that can take several hours. It says the results were not found to be reliable. So beware of those home test kits. Now, another one is hold your breath to spot COVID-19. People have also been told not to fall for a self-test, which involves holding your breath. The Department for Health and Social Care has warned about anonymous online posts that claim to come from Japanese doctors recommending holding your breath as a way of testing for COVID-19. The theory is that if you can hold your breath for around 20 seconds without coughing, tightness or discomfort, then this proves your lungs are functioning properly, so therefore you're not infected. However, the Department of Health says there's no basis for this claim and you should instead consult nhs.uk/coronavirus for official advice on the outbreak. And it can't spread in warm climates. Well, the World Health Organization, the WHO, says that all the evidence suggests coronavirus can be transmitted anywhere, including places with hot and humid weather. Well, obviously, because it's over in Spain, Italy, etc. And there is also no evidence to suggest that the disease can be killed by cold or snowy conditions. It's a tough one, this, isn't it? There has been some confusion regarding seasonality and coronavirus. According to the professor of global health at the University of Oxford. In fact, the issue is simply that when the spring and summer come along, normal cases of flu will drop off, relieving the burden on the NHS, which will be better able to deal with coronavirus. The best way to protect yourself against COVID-19 is by frequently washing your hands. This removes viruses that could be on your skin and avoids infection that could occur if you then touch your mouth, nose and eyes. Ibuprofen can worsen symptoms. Now, French authorities have warned that taking over-the-counter anti-inflammatory drugs to help with the coronavirus symptoms could worsen the situation. Now, the country's health minister said that anti-inflammatories such as ibuprofen and cortisone could be a factor in aggravating the infection. In case of fever, take paracetamol. If you already take anti-inflammatory drugs, ask your doctor's advice. Now, an associate professor of epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine says most deaths from COVID-19 have been among older people and those with underlying health conditions. We already know that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs such as ibuprofen should be prescribed with caution for people who have underlying health conditions. And the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, NICE, recommends prescribing the lowest dose for the shortest duration to prevent adverse effects such as gastrointestinal bleeding and cardiovascular or kidney problems. For COVID-19, research is needed into the effects of specific NSAIDs among people with different underlying health conditions, which takes into account the severity of the infection. In the meantime, for treating symptoms such as fever and sore throat, it seems sensible to stick to paracetamol as first choice. I think there's been quite a bit in the press as well about ibuprofen aggravating the situation, so it's probably one to avoid. Can vitamin C prevent the virus? Now, vitamin C became known as a popular immune-boosting supplement after twice Nobel Prize winner Linus Pauling claimed that taking large doses of it could not only prevent the common cold, but also protect against severe illnesses, including cancer and heart disease. Recent research suggests taking an average dose of 200 milligrams of vitamin C does reduce the duration of a cold in the general population, according to a review of several dozen studies in 2013, cited by independent fact-checking charity fullfact.org. However, there was no evidence it could prevent the common cold. And similarly, there's no evidence it can prevent COVID-19. No harm in taking some extra vitamin C, though, then, is there? Men are more likely to catch it. Well, there's no evidence that one gender or racial group is more likely to be infected by the coronavirus than another. Some patients or some people ask if they're more likely to catch coronavirus from Chinese people. The answer is no. All the data we have so far suggests that everyone is equally at risk of becoming infected. However, evidence suggests that children aged 16 and under are generally very mildly affected. Those most at risk of dying or developing severe cases are people with underlying health conditions such as respiratory problems. Now, salt water will kill the virus. Gargling with warm water mixed with salt or vinegar can help to eliminate the virus, which lodges in the throat before it reaches the lungs, according to one post during the rounds on Facebook. There's no evidence of any scientific basis to this advice, according to the independent fact-checking charity fullfact.org. The NHS does recommend that gargling with salt water can soothe a normal sore throat, but this advice does not apply to those with coronavirus for which there is no known cure. The WHO has also said that there is no evidence that rinsing your nose with a saline solution will help to prevent infection with coronavirus. And I know that's a kind of a yogic practice, using a neti pot and just rinsing the nose out with salt water. Well, it's a good practice to do anyway. Keeps the sinuses clear, and to be perfectly honest, it's very refreshing. It's a nice thing to do. So again, it's not going to do you any harm. There's no magic health cures here, but surely anything you can do that's going to kind of make you feel a bit better has got to be good. And also, there's a myth that's saying you can make your own hand sanitizer, but that's not recommended. It would be very easy to get the ingredients and the proportions wrong. And in this day and age as well, I don't think there's anybody that can buy any hand sanitizer. And if you're the person that's got it all, then share it out, please. But there's no need anyway. Washing your hands regularly and thoroughly with soap and water is the best way of preventing the spread of this virus. So just stick to those healthy rules, if you like. I think it's just being sensible, isn't it, really? I mean, nobody wants to catch it, do they? Nobody wants to fall foul of this horribleness that's going around at the moment. But just good clean, healthy, you know, kind of things. Eat a healthy diet, take some vitamin C, keep washing your hands. We should be doing those things anyway, you know, and that helps to build up a healthy immune system. So keep doing all those good positive things that I've been talking to you about all these months, years even. And it has been advised that even healthy people should reduce contact with others, while the over 70s and those classed as vulnerable should self-isolate for several months to reduce their chances of catching COVID-19. So millions of people are now facing weeks at home. So there are things you can do to ensure you and your family stay fit and well during the lockdown period. So the importance of a good diet is vital to health, and particularly so for older people who rarely go outdoors and can easily find themselves losing interest in food. And the period of self-isolation will mean that older people need to pay extra attention to their dietary needs, ensuring they get all the minerals and vitamins they require. As we get older, we lose muscle mass and we gain fat mass, but studies show that this can rapidly accelerate if we stay inactive. So think about including muscle-building protein in breakfast and protein-based meals at lunch and dinner. And also you can add snacks such as eggs. The body requires activity to stimulate the conversion of protein to muscle. So need to have a little bit of exercise as well. So please don't sit around for too much every day, binging on Netflix or whatever it might be that's taken your eye. And try and experiment with food, but that's if you can get any food. You know, it's all very well talking about doing all these things, but I know there's very little food and very little of anything in the shops at the moment, which seems absolutely crazy. But if you can, just experiment with tasty ingredients in order to whet your appetite. Now, loneliness and isolation can have a huge impact on appetite, and many people say they don't feel hungry if they eat alone. So spices, sauces and trying new meals could help make you look forward to eating your meals. And if you end up relying on ready meals, well, it's okay. It's better to eat something than nothing. And many of these meals are designed for older people with a full range of nutrients. So, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how life can change in such a short space of time. But anyway, right, we'll take another little break now. And after the break, I shall be carrying on with some more coronavirus health tips. Stay tuned for more after this.
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And yes, we're talking about hints and tips to keep you well during this current pandemic. So make sure you get enough vitamin D. As we age, our skin becomes less effective at making vitamin D in the presence of sunlight. And people who rarely go out in the sun need extra vitamin D, which is vital for healthy bones and teeth. Current guidelines advise those over the age of 65 to take 10 micrograms of vitamin D each day as a supplement. And vitamin D is found in many different foods, but often in low quantities, which aren't sufficient for older people. You can buy vitamin D supplements from most pharmacies, though. Now, if you have a low body weight or suddenly lose lots of weight in an unplanned way, you can increase your calorie intake and nutritional intake by adding extra ingredients to fresh whole milk. If you add 4 tablespoons of dried skimmed milk powder to a pint of milk, it not only adds extra calories, but also a range of vital vitamins and minerals. And older people in lockdown may need to rely on canned foods, and it may be harder to get regular supplies of fresh fruit and vegetables. Fortunately, frozen foods can be a better source of vitamin C than tinned food. Vitamin C is essential for a healthy immune system. Frozen berries, which many young people use for breakfast smoothies, are excellent for older people too. You could use them in a compote or a crumble. And frozen peas, which are often frozen straight after being picked, are packed full of vitamin C. And drink plenty of fluids as well. The guideline for adults is to drink 1.5 to 2 litres of fluid each day. But older people tend to drink far less than this, particularly those who are inactive. So the less exercise you do, the less mobile you become. So tasks such as going to the toilet become more of a burden. And some older people start reducing their fluid intake to decrease their need to get up and go to the loo. And this in turn can lead to dehydration and problems, including urinary tract infections. So there's no evidence that caffeine-based drinks are less effective at hydrating people. So drink regular cups of tea and coffee or sip water and other drinks throughout the day. And boost your fibre intake alongside increasing your intake of fluids. Fibre can encourage a healthy gut and regular motions, but you need to drink plenty of fluid at the same time. Easy to chew cereals such as porridge are a good option. And around 5 to 10% of people over the age of 65 in the UK don't get enough B vitamins in their diet. Low levels of vitamin B12 have been linked to a higher risk of stroke and dementia. Make sure you eat enough leafy green vegetables such as spinach and broccoli, which are an excellent source, and you can buy these frozen. And although older people will have to stay at home, it's vital that they keep moving. As we age, we naturally lose muscle mass at a steady rate, and this accelerates past the age of 75. However, even a short period of sedentary living can dramatically increase this decline. A 2018 study published in the Journal of Physiology found that healthy older people who were inactive for 2 weeks had pronounced loss of muscle mass in their lower limbs. To avoid this, aim to get up on your feet at least once an hour. If you have a garden, take a stroll for 10 minutes several times each day. Try to walk briskly until you feel a little warmer and your breathing rate rises slightly. Or when waiting for the kettle to boil, for example, go up on your toes 10 times in a row while holding onto something like the kitchen sink. So, and thinking of other ways in which you can exercise as well, stair climbing works your heart, lungs and leg muscles. Japanese research found that using the stairs for 2 sets of 3 minutes in the 1 to 2 hours after eating lowered blood sugar levels in those with type 2 diabetes, while Canadian researchers suggested even just climbing 1 flight of stairs daily makes your brain 0.58 years younger. That's not much, is it? How do they quantify that? That's got my brain working. Even taking side steps while holding the banister changes the body in different ways. You can also march on the spot if you don't have stairs. And pushing against something that won't move while you also don't move creates what's known as an isometric contraction of the muscle. Isometric exercises help maintain muscle mass and can be particularly good for people recovering from injury or with problems such as arthritis, which can affect movement and lower blood pressure. A couple of simple moves to get you started are just standing with feet 2 feet away from the wall, hands pressed against it in an upright press-up position, and then lean forward and push and hold for 10 seconds. Now move your feet back another 2 inches and repeat the hold. Keep moving back until you reach the point when you start with straight arms. Well, that sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? And a backpack filled with books can act like a weighted vest. You can climb up the stairs with it on or perform lunges, squats or push-ups. And you can lift heavy pans, like if some of those La Cruze pans are really heavy. You can use that in a workout as well, just lifting and lowering. Good for side bends, targeting the oblique muscles, or squat, grab it and then raise it straight over your head like those weightlifters do. Before repeating, lower it down, of course, very gently. And Age UK has a free exercise video appropriate for all older people who want to work out at home, and it can be downloaded from generationgames.org.uk. And like people of all ages, older people need to ensure they have the basic first aid kit, but they may also need to stock up to treat things such as joint pain. So first aid essentials for the over 70s. Obviously, if you're already on various medications and as far as the drugs are concerned, then, you know, do ask your doctor for advice, obviously. But paracetamol, which can treat pain, including headaches and toothaches, and reduce fever. Avoid aspirin, though, because it can affect blood clotting or cause stomach ulcers. And then there's ibuprofen gel, which is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory painkiller. It's particularly good for rheumatic and muscular aches and pains. And as a topical gel, it avoids any risk of stomach ulcers compared to pill form. And then cough medicine. Felcodine linctus is a cough mixture which suppresses irritating, dry and tickly coughs. Night medications contain a sedative which help you sleep, so don't use it during the day. And then there's stretchy bandages and tubey grip. The older you get, the thinner the skin. So avoid sticky plasters if possible and choose Me-Paw dressings, breathable dressings for cuts, or soft bandages for minor wounds. Keep an eye on the wound and consult a health professional if it becomes hot, red or infected or takes longer than usual to heal. Ordinary soap is better to use over antiseptic creams. Wash wounds with soap and water. A minor burn should be treated by holding the affected area under cold running water for 20 minutes. Savlon or antiseptic cream is not recommended. And some Bongella. If you wear dentures, Bongella can help soothe ulcers or mouth injuries. And a sore throat spray. These numb the throat. They do work, but don't drink overly hot drinks after using them. The effect can last an hour or more. And maybe a thermometer as well. A cheap digital thermometer is good, but not absolutely necessary. You can usually tell you have a temperature if you look flushed and feel hotter than normal on your forehead. So if you take regular medication, organise repeat prescriptions to be sent to your preferred pharmacy and ask a friend or family member to pick them up or request a home delivery. And many pharmacies will actually do this for free. So there's some nice tips and hints for you in these trying times. And in a bid to try and find a cure for the coronavirus, apparently volunteers could be paid up to £3,500 to be infected with the coronavirus. Scientists tried to find a vaccine. The Queen Mary BioEnterprises Innovation Centre in London is recruiting 24 people for the study, and they're going to be injected with two weaker strains of the deadly virus, which has killed more than 3,800 people worldwide, giving them similar respiratory symptoms. A jab developed by the company will then be tested, and patients will remain in quarantine for 2 weeks to see if it's successful. And apparently some 35 other vaccines are in development, and the UK government has promised an extra £46 million in the fight against coronavirus. However, experts have said a vaccine is unlikely to be approved in time to halt the current epidemic, which has so far seen more than 110,000 people across the globe fall ill with COVID-19. So it's very worrying, really, isn't it? I mean, there's all sorts of things being put in place, isn't there? But hopefully this will help. I mean, the participants will be injected with two less serious strains of the virus, and then they must stay in quarantine for 2 weeks and eat a restricted diet, and they aren't allowed to have contact with anyone else or exercise. And doctors working on the study will assess their response to the vaccine while wearing protective clothing and ventilators as well. So it's a part of a huge global effort to find a vaccine for coronavirus, as Europe is also suffering so badly as well. And around 35 vaccine candidates have been listed by the WHO as well. So hopefully they're going to find something that's going to fix this soon. It means that they're all in the preclinical stage, which means they haven't been studied in humans yet. And normally it takes years to develop new treatments for illnesses because new medicines need to be extensively researched. And usually thousands of people have to take part in the research. But I think, guess this is all being rushed through very quickly, isn't it? So we can do something about it. But yeah. Right, we're going to take another little break now. So amidst all the panic and worry and anxiety over what's going on, we need to make sure that we can stay as relaxed and calm as possible and also be getting the correct amount of sleep. So let's talk a little bit about sleep and something nice and relaxing to finish the show with this evening. So stay tuned for more right after this.
Long ago, high on a mountain in Mexico, lived a young shepherd boy, Angelo, who met a young girl and he loved her so. Rich was she, came from a very high family. Angelo knew it could never be. They ran away to their destiny. Running away together, running away forever, Angelo. Running away from danger, hiding from every stranger, Angelo. They knew it wasn't wrong, they found their love so strong. They took their lives at night, and in the morning light, they found them on the sand, they saw them lying there, hand in hand. Long ago, high on a mountain in Mexico, lived a young shepherd boy, Angelo, who met a young girl and he loved her so.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. Yes, sleep. Sleep is very important at any time. And it's a pretty big deal, isn't it? From you can get so many sleep apps at the moment, can't you? Different ones that you can monitor your sleep. And thinking about your pre-bedtime routine, you can give that an overhaul. But sleep is something we spend a lot of time thinking about, actually. But while we're busy trying to ensure our bedroom is the right temperature and maybe spraying your pillow with magical sleep spray, you could be overlooking something else that could have a pretty big impact on your sleep quality, which is the position you sleep in. Now, according to sleep experts, the position that you find yourself falling into most nights could actually end up causing you health problems, ranging from aches and pains to sleep apnea. Now, everyone sleeps differently, but if you subconsciously fall into the incorrect sleeping position, neck, back and other muscle problems may become exacerbated. Now, being able to adapt your body to sleep in a new position could actually be the secret to improving your sleep, or you could also try modifying your favourite sleep position to make sure you're getting the most out of it. It's important to recognise your body's needs and try to adapt your physical positioning when trying to drift off to sleep, being mindful of tension in your body. Now, with that in mind, you need to think about some of the most common sleep positions and how they might positively and negatively impact your sleep time. So the fetal position, or the baby, is the most popular way to sleep, with around 41% of adults opting for this sleep position. In basic terms, if you enjoy this position, it's being with your legs curled up underneath you. As well as being the most popular position, this causes the least amount of sleep interruptions and reduces the risk of neck strain, particularly if your mattress is quite firm. Now, according to others, the best position for them is to lay on their back with their arms straight down by their sides, like a soldier. So this is called the soldier position. The sleepy soldier allows the neck to rest in a neutral position and decreases the chance of premature wrinkles. Anyone suffering from back problems may also want to try out the sleepy soldier because it enables your weight to be evenly distributed, relieving pressure on the shoulders and spine. Now, the best for easing back and neck pain is the log roller. In order to pull off the log roller, you must rest on your side with your legs extended straight and your arms in place. With your arms neatly at your side in line with your body, the log roller can be great for easing back and neck pain as you keep both in proper alignment. That sounds almost as though you could be like in a cocoon or something, doesn't it? Like in that position. And then the skydiver involves people sleeping on their stomach with their head to one side and their arms are wrapped around a pillow. Now, according to sleep.org, 7% of adults are partial to some stomach sleeping, but it can lead to back and neck pain, mainly because it's hard to keep your spine in a neutral position. Plus, stomach sleepers put pressure on their muscles and joints, which can potentially lead to numbness, tingling aches and irritated nerves. So a king or a double-sized mattress would suit this sleeper because you require a lot of space to spread out. And while it can accentuate back or neck pain, it can ease snoring and sleep apnea. Sleeping on your side or front can help prevent the base of your soft palate collapse to the back of your wall of your throat, causing that deep vibrating sound during sleep or snoring. And the best all-rounder is the yearning dreamer. Now, to do this sleep position, the sleeper rests on their side, but their arms are stretched out in front of them. Like the log roller, this position comfortably supports your back as it follows the natural curve of the spine. And it can also help improve snoring or those suffering from sleep apnea. Previous research has revealed that sleeping on your side can significantly reduce time spent snoring and the intensity of snoring. But there is one downside. While 15% of adults choose to sleep on their side, this can lead to wrinkles because half of your face pushes against the pillow. So the best one for a great night's sleep apparently is the shooting star. If you like to take up all the room, the shooting star could be your sleep position of choice. The shooting star involves lying on your back with legs stretched out and arms elongated up beyond the head, resembling a starfish. And while this position can increase snoring, if you have the support of a great mattress, preferably a larger one, to accommodate those outstretched limbs, you should find yourself sleeping sound and waking up nice and bright in the morning. So those are some good sleep tips, sleep position tips. Now, if you've tried all the different sleep positions and you're still Maybe finding that you're not sleeping very well, or maybe your anxiety levels are increasing in these uncertain times. Exercise is one of the few things that can help us sort through our feelings and allow us to be completely in the moment, with running in particular cited as a powerful way of helping us feel more in control. Now, the benefits of running are nothing new. Running has been known to significantly improve physical health by helping to build strong bones, improve cardiovascular fitness, strengthen muscles, reduce the risk of certain cancers, and help maintain a healthy weight, just to name a few. But the vast mental and emotional benefits of going for a run are a reason alone to lace up your trainers and pound the pavements. So right now, going for a run can be even more beneficial if your local gym is off limits as well. So it's safer to be outside than inside when it comes to disease transmission, and there's no data that you will get sick from really any respiratory pathogen when running in cold weather. But it's best to go solo or in a pair or small group to limit social interactions, obviously. Now, if you've ever gone for a run, you'll surely have reaped the calming mental benefits. And even if you haven't felt the much sought-after runner's high, you've likely experienced the rush of endorphins that many runners often report following a run. So how does running actually benefit mental and physical health? Well, a study published in the journal Brain Plasticity shows that high-intensity exercise, such as running, activates the networks in our brain that deal with sorting through our emotions and allows us to process them more effectively. So if ever you felt a difficult problem seemingly melting away during a run, there is actually scientific evidence to explain why this happens. Now, running and exercise in general is an excellent way of reducing stress in the body, reducing our cortisol levels and therefore leaving us calmer and more able to think through problems in a rational way. Now, a number of studies have shown that aerobic exercise, particularly running, can improve people's ability to cope with stress. And in a review of research about exercise and stress that's been published in Clinical Psychology Review, concludes that training recruits a process which confers enduring resilience to stress. And researchers believe that the neurotransmitters in our brain, like serotonin, increase during activities like running and encourage the brain to generate new neurons, leaving runners with a feeling of calm and contentment. So while there is no instant cure-all for mental health conditions like depression, running has been shown to have a huge positive impact on someone experiencing a major depressive disorder. And in another study, researchers found that just 30 minutes of walking or jogging on a treadmill could instantly lift a sufferer's mood and provide significant mental health benefits to someone suffering from depression. And in another study, it observed rats and mice running on a wheel, and it was concluded that physical activity could provide antidepressant-like effects and therefore be an effective alternative to traditional medicines in treating depression. So if you've ever sort of like just crashed out after straight out after exercising, you'll know that after moving your body, accelerating your heart rate and getting your blood pumping is a surefire way to tire you out. Exhaust your body and mind and you will ensure you have no trouble falling asleep. In a study of 51 young people, half the participants were told to add running to weekly routines, jogging at a moderate pace for 30 minutes five times a week. And after 3 weeks, the group that had taken up running reported better sleep, with improved signs of psychological functioning and sharper focus throughout the day. Despite the study's average age being 18, these results will likely apply to people of any age. And aside from the mental health benefits of running, improving your physical health is one of the main reasons that people take up running. And aerobic exercise of any kind improves your cardiovascular health. And another study showed that even small amounts of running can have a significant impact on your heart. And it seems the more you run, the better, as researchers have found that people who run at least 40 miles a week have even healthier hearts than those who run 13 times a week. So as we age, our cognitive brain functions decline, meaning things like memory and focus can slow down. But adding regular running into your routine could help combat this decline and improve your mental agility. A review of research on the cognitive boosting effect of aerobic exercise found that running improved children, young adults and older adults' working memory, focus and task switching abilities. So lots of Lots of good things there. And regular aerobic exercise was also shown to have a notable effect on existing cancer sufferers' survival chances after diagnosis, thanks to things like early detection, coping mechanisms and speedy rehabilitation. And the best thing about running also is it's free. You can do it anywhere, anytime, with only a few pieces of kit needed, and also no kind of expensive things that you need to do it. Maybe a nice pair of trainers or something, but that's about it. Just get those shoes on and run. Okay, I hope you found the show this evening informative. And lots of hints and tips there to help keep you fit and healthy in these troubling times. So until this time next week, take care of your body and please do take care of yourself.
Ciao.